Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Hello.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm pretty okay.
Pretty okay.
Well, I'm pretty and I'm okay. You know, Lola has been given a solo at...
At what?
At one of the school concerts this year.
Oh, has she?
She's absolutely friggin' stoked.
She didn't tell me that.
She's a little movie star. And we were singing it yesterday.
What does she have to sing?
Have a guess what it is.
I don't know.
New York, concrete jungle where dreams are made of. I can't remember the lesson.
Is she liking it?
Oh, she's practicing it. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Sing it for me. So she gets, she's at that age now, which we're going to talk about this in a few minutes. But she's at that age now where she used to sing for me all the time. Like I'd say, sing it for me, Lola. She'd sit there and she'd just blast her head out, you know, blast her voice out, blast her head off. And or she'd come into bed beside me, she'd sing me a song before I went to sleep. She'd sing me to sleep. Yeah. Isn't that meant to be the other way around?
Yes.
And but this time, she's at that age now where she won't sing it. I'm like, Lola, sing it. She goes, no. I said, I'll sing it with you. She goes, no. No, I'm not going to sing it. I'm like, Lola, please sing it. You can't make me do that.
Yes, well, you just have to. Your kids, though, can I just say, when they're in the shower, the house sounds amazing. It's like Lexi's just singing at the top of her lungs. Yeah. Lola just singing. They're just like having this little concert. Mm. And you're in, and you've got a big house, and we're quite far away, and you can just hear this like music, and it's just like nuts. Yeah. And some of it doesn't actually is not even like a real song, but it's just
followed on by their dad going, "Shut the fuck up, get right off, and get to bed."
I know it is a little bit like that, but it's like really lovely. I love it because it's a really. I said to Angie the day when I was there, I was like, "It's actually a really good feeling being."
You know,
in the house, I
learned because you think, you know, we're always taught. You know, don't wind the kids up before they go to bed.
Yeah, which
don't wind the kids up. So no, I'm good now. But Ollie's at this point now where he wants to have a boxing match with me. Mm-hmm. So the other day, the three of them were jumping on me, you know, and Lola, Lexi had hold of my hands and I tripped her, but didn't she let go of my hands and bang her head on the ground? Oh my God. You know, and you're just like, did that just happen? Holy shit. What am I going to do? And she was so mad. And I'm like, I just can't do this. But so you have to get to that point where, you know, I'm really gentle when I play with them now. You know, I am. I'm very gentle. But that was just one of those things where you're messing and you're like, you do something and you think, shit.
Ollie's at the point
winding down before bed. But you don't, people don't realize that when you put them into the shower, they actually wake up. Do you know what I mean? They come out and he's like, he's just doing somersaults over the bed. Lola's doing cartwheels everywhere, naked across the house. Lexi's just saying, three of them are just, you know, doing headstands up against the window. And it's like, just go to bed. You know, no wonder parents get absolutely mental. Just go to bed. I'm just like, just get into bed, you know? Oh my God, it drives me mad. Anyway.
Patience. You've got so much patience there. This is not a parenting podcast, thank goodness, because we'd have to backtrack on all of that.
Don't do anything I just said.
Just any of that. So it's been a very interesting week, has it not?
Well, it's probably...
How big is your head right now? Let's just think about that. No, only joking. No, but it's been a really interesting week, right? Because we have been, how long have we been working together? Almost 20 years. Like we're saying almost 20 years because we can't be bothered figuring it out. But I think it's about 19 this year, right?
Yeah, my math is terrible. And you're a math teacher, right?
I used to be. Just a teacher.
2003, wasn't it? 2003?
Oh, give or take around there. Yeah. So it's been almost 20 years. So we have been working together for a long time. We have put out a lot of information, some of it really, really, really good. Actually, all of it really good.
Yeah. We've had our shitty information.
No, I understand that we don't always deliver the information well, but I think our information's been great, good. Yeah. That's why I kind of said it. But our delivery has been definitely shite sometimes. But then... You know, you're going about and like, you know, we work on social media a lot. We've got somebody specifically dedicated to doing that because like you and I are pretty crap at that. We didn't grow up in the age where you took a photo of everything that you ate and wore and stuff like that. So we are always hassled by our social media team about you got to be a little bit more present on Facebook. Yeah. And they're like, okay, nothing happens. Yeah, but what did you do? I'm like, read a book. Well, tell us what book. I'm like, no, I just want to read my book.
Well, I don't understand it. Really. Right, yeah. I mean, I get it. I do understand. But some of the stuff that I watch that goes bananas on Facebook, I think.
Doesn't make sense.
What the fuck? How did, what, like, honestly.
Exactly.
Because so I can put out an amazing piece of information.
Point. Yeah.
On, you know. On consciousness or the mind or universal laws. And it gets like 3 likes. No. But I put out a video of me, you know.
Well, this is the thing, right? So we've been doing reels on Instagram. And then just this week, or no, actually it was about week before, 2 weeks ago, I think, we started noticing that a reel that we'd posted a couple of weeks earlier had started gaining traction and people were watching it. So previous to that, the highest watched video was probably about 11,000 views.
Was it? Right?
Yeah, 11,000 views.
Really?
Reels.
Yes. Reels, right.
And then next minute we're sitting here and we're being told that this video's gained a lot of traction. And I'm like, really? Okay, what video is it? And it's a video of you literally throwing a tantrum. Yeah. Just like but it's obvious now as we speak currently, I think it's had 3.3 million views, I think.
No, I think we're above 3.4. Not that I'm counting. I don't know. Not that I haven't looked at it
3.3 million views. Let me just quickly check that because now I'm here. I need to check that. I'm probably going to start the damn thing.
I mean, by the time people listen to this, it'll probably be around about 4 million views.
Oh, yes. Make it like higher, Mitch. Probably
once
be
it
higher.
Gets to 8 million.
No, it's 3.4. So we've 3.4 million views, right?
Yeah.
And it's like it's a 4-second video. Yeah. But what surprised us a lot is that it's something like that has had so much traction. But not so much that. It's the fact about, I suppose, the content.
Yeah.
And I think the content of it. And we really realised how important it maybe was for us to make sure that we go back to talking about some of that stuff sometimes. Because, so that basically for anybody who hasn't seen it, basically what it was that a comment of you saying, the concept is that. It's only 4 seconds.
Play it.
The concept is that when your inner child doesn't get the attention it deserves,
it causes havoc.
Yeah, it causes havoc, right? And so all it is that in response to not getting the attention I deserve, I've decided to cause problems on purpose. And there's an image of you, video of you throwing
a chair,
and that's it, right? Yeah. That's the total reel. And a lot of people have commented on it based on that whole inner child, that trauma thing, the fact that. And I think that what happens, I've said this to you many times, sometimes we get caught up in the really deep stuff and the stuff that we've been, and we just assume everybody knows some of the stuff that we have spoken about for almost 20 years, like the inner child stuff, how our concepts are created and stuff like that, and don't realise that actually this is what's going on. And I think it was a real wake-up call in a way for us to say maybe we need to talk about that stuff again.
Yeah, but also I also think, like, I was really looking into the concept of, you know, because you look at it and you think, okay, well, why did this work? You know, and I think for years, first off, you know, like, I like being funny. Right, I just do. The way in which I compensate for irony is with comedy, or for sincerity, you know, I always try to balance out with a bit of humor. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really important in that particular piece, is because there was irony and humor and it made people relate to the fact, hey, you know, there is a fundamental reason why you sabotage things.
Yes.
You don't beat yourself up, because a lot of the time it's your subconscious mind that's doing it, because you're not actually intentionally going out and screwing up.
Well, I think this is the thing that we've been talking about that for a long time, but I don't think that because it's reached so many people, I'm thinking that maybe there's so many people that haven't heard that kind of concept that we take for granted because we've been doing the work for a long time.
I think there's a lot to be said there also for the long game. Do you know what I mean? Like, when we, like, just because.
Yes, because of the fact that it's taken so long.
So
for
long.
That it's overnight successes are never overnight successes. No. I'm saying that our whole success is based on a reel that's reached that many people. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm just saying that.
Jesus, like, when shallow.
When we see that something that's happened, that's not like a random one off thing. It's something people.
No, there's a ton. There's a ton of stuff. I mean, this is the angle that we come from.
Yeah.
You know, we come from saying, every cloud has a silver lining. But to find out what that lining is and to understand it, you have to look into the cloud.
Yes, 100%. That's the message, right?
Yeah.
So I think that today let's talk a little bit about that why that happens and why the inner child does that, why the inner child does throw the tantrums when it's not getting the attention. What is actually going on? And let's just break that down so that we understand what's actually happening there. I think we have to talk a little bit about the 0 to 8 type scenario to sort of demonstrate that, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
So well, do you want to do
that? Yeah. So I've spent 20 years talking about this stuff. And so when I talk about it, I think, oh my God, I'm just rabbiting on it. But these guys have heard this a thousand times.
Hang on a second.
And
this is my exact point.
Yeah.
Is that we take it for granted because we've said it so many times. And some of our dedicated people that are listening to it, that listen to every single podcast, will have
heard it
as well. But that's not the case for everybody. And just because we say it so many times, I think sometimes we take for granted that it's actually really important. And even though you've heard it before, it's really important to hear it again because you pick up something different every single time.
Well, so I think first off, people, you know, I watch people ridicule themselves and slam themselves and beat themselves up and put themselves down because they continuously sabotage things.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? They continuously sabotage, you know, they go for a job and that, you know, their heart is set on getting this job. And they go in there and they go into the interview and they bomb out.
Mm-hmm.
And then they think, oh my God, I you know, I'm so useless. I'm so stupid. I was so ill prepared. I was so, you know, what was I thinking? Who did I think I was thinking I was going to get this job? Not asking themselves a deeper question as to why do you think you did that? What do you think it was that was causing that? Because something is docking into the motor function of your brain and compelling you to behave a certain way under that amount of pressure and making you not be yourself. Does that make sense? And that self that you become when you're not your true self is the one that is sabotaging things. But where does that stem from? Where does that come from?
Does it stem from?
Well, you're building your whole concept of your world and your personality between 0 and 8 years old. Mm-hmm. So between 0 and 8 years old, you're wiring your brain and you're born into the world. You're the most primitive of all creatures that are born into the world. You're the least evolved of all the universe's creatures. You're the least evolved of all of them when you come through the birthing canal, because if you were any more evolved physically, you would not make it through the birthing canal. So therefore, there actually would be no human life on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So you're born into this world, and as you do this, you know, you're taking in information in through your senses, and as you take in the information, the mammalian part of your brain, which is designed for the purpose of reproduction and protection and survival, which is the oldest part of your brain, which is the seat of your subconscious mind, is taking in information just to get this life force to live. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So as to be able to survive and make it through whatever's going on. So as you do this, you take in information, and you take in information through your senses. So when you do this, you have an experience. Attached to that experience is a memory. Attached to that memory is an emotion. And anytime an emotion is triggered inside of a human being, that emotion becomes cyclical, because the memory is only part of what happened and the experience is only part of what happened. So what do we mean by that? Well, all human senses are bipolar. All human senses are monopolar. What that means is that when you have an experience through your senses, you're only essentially experiencing things as a singularity. So when you experience happiness, you don't experience sadness. So when you're experiencing pleasure, you don't experience pain. You might oscillate and tick-tock violently between the two. Pleasure, pain, pleasure, pain, pleasure, pain. But all senses are, they're experiencing things as a singularity. So, but the problem is we're born into a dualistic reality.
So that's all well and good, right? But talk about it in terms of an example.
Yeah,
right?
I will. I'll get there.
Good.
So you have an example is that you have an experience where...
Why don't you use a personal example?
Yeah, so I'll give an example. You have an experience. Like I remember walking home from church once with my dad. Mm. My dad's very Catholic. And I was about 8 years old. And I'd stopped him and I'd said, you know, that And my as far as I was concerned up until that point, my father loved me. Like, he just unconditionally loved me. I followed him everywhere. We were best of pals. He put me to bed at night. He woke me up in the morning. He was there all of the time, except when he was at work. And so I'm walking home from the church one day, and we'd been in this Catholic church, and we're coming back, and I said to him, you know, Dad, if there was a sin I could do in my life, that was an immortal sin, what would that sin be? And he looked at me and he said to me, if you ever get, he got down on his hands and knees and he looked into my eyes and he said, if you ever get involved in drugs, I will completely disown you. Mm-hmm. So in that moment, what happened for me was I had an experience which I just shared. Now, if you want me to take you deeper into that experience, what I'd say to you is just imagine this. It's freezing cold. It's Dublin. It's grey. It's piddling down with rain. Mm-hmm. I've a mile to walk with my father. I'm a tiny little kid. I'm holding his hand. His hand is warm. My hand is freezing. I've snot's running out of my nose because that's how you wear it on it. It's freezing. So, and then he gets down on his hands and knees in the rain. And I can hear the rain bouncing off his shoulders and off his hair and then off his jacket. And he looks at me and he says to me, if you ever get involved in drugs, I will completely disown you. In that moment, I felt that there was something I could do in my father's life that my father wouldn't love me.
Yeah.
So suddenly I had this concept that there was something I could do in my future that was never going to be enough for him to love me.
So that was a completely different experience than what you'd experienced up until that point.
Yes.
Because up until that point, what had happened is that everything you did, your dad loved you, it was fine, everything was fine, and then all he said was one thing.
Yes.
And you felt that there was a possibility of you doing something that would mean that you weren't going to get
so
loved.
So I saw it as one side.
Yeah.
Right? Now, if I ask anybody else, all my father was doing in that moment was just loving his son because he was just trying to protect me.
Yeah.
He saw that as a moment in me asking him the depth of that question. In me asking him the depth of that question, he saw something in that moment as an opportunity to teach me because he loved me.
Mm-hmm.
But in that moment, I made me in the future wrong.
Yes.
And him in the future right.
Yes.
Why? Because all human senses are bipolar. You only experience things as a singularity and you oscillate and tick-tock in your emotions. I could have done it the other way around. I could have gone in the future, I'm never going to do anything wrong.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make him wrong and me right.
Yeah.
Make sense?
Yeah.
So you have an experience happen through your senses. Attached to that experience is a memory. And attached to that memory at that time, what I felt that in that moment was I felt frightened.
Yeah.
I felt sad. I felt not good enough.
Yeah.
Now, from that point on in my life, anytime I did anything, I was continuously checking, well, if I do this, is he going to love me? If I do this, will he stop loving me? If I do that, will he stop loving me? So the first time I had a cigarette, will he stop loving me? First time I drank a beer, will he stop loving me? And I kept testing this love.
But it's not just that those things that you perceive are negative. It's also because this transpired when you became an adult, right? And this is what I think people don't realise as well, is that when that stuff happened, you were aware of the situation because you experienced the situation, right? But you wouldn't have been able to put these same words into describing what happened at a subconscious level, right?
Yeah.
Because what happened, it wasn't something like, oh, now from this moment on, and it wasn't a conscious awareness that from this moment on, I'm going to go and ask my dad. It was something happened at a deep level for you, for this 8-year-old little kid.
Yeah.
That what happened was is that this situation circled around.
Yeah.
And therefore, it was an unconscious, subconscious thing that you would keep checking with your dad, or even if you didn't check outwardly with your dad, you would check internally with yourself about your dad's reaction.
But
that includes, sorry, just let me cover this point. That also includes stuff that was when a kid, like if I smoke a joint, if I have the cigarette, if I drink this beer, etc. But it also transpired up all the way up into adulthood. Yeah. If I marry this woman, if I start this business, if I leave this business, all of the things are, if I did this, will my dad, is this going to be the thing that's going to mean my dad doesn't love me?
But it was also attached to a mortal sin.
Right.
Because I was saying to him, what is the worst thing that I could ever do? Because you were always dreamt heaven and hell, good and evil, so God and the devil.
Yeah.
So it was also attached around. So in fact, I had built this concept. 85% of my neural pathways were constructed by the time I was eight. I had built this, as with everybody, I'd built this concept of my reality by the time I was eight.
Yep.
And then anything that challenged us, so if that's who you think you are, so, you know, remember, your experiences create your memories create your emotions create your beliefs create your behaviors create your temperament becomes your mood, and your mood becomes your way of life.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're building there in all of those things is you're building what's called your personal reality. Your personal reality then becomes your personality. And your personality is how you perceive other people see you.
Yeah.
Your persona is how you see yourself. So watch. So therefore, I've built all of these concepts of my reality. I'm 8 years old and I've hardwired and fired 85% of my neural pathways in my brain are hardwired and fired at that moment. So therefore, by the time I'm 8 years old, anything that challenges my personality, my personal reality, my mood, my temperament, my way of life, my behavior, my belief systems, my experiences, my memories, my emotions, my memories, and my experiences, anything that challenges those things, because I think I am all of that,
mm-hmm.
I identify with that.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that challenges all of those concepts means you're challenging your personality, your ego personality. So anything that challenges any of that stuff says that you might not be that. Now, if you're not who you think you are, then who are you?
Mm-hmm.
You understand? If you're not all of those concepts, then who are you?
Mm-hmm.
So anything that threatens those concepts, the mammalian brain feels as if its life is being threatened.
Mm-hmm.
So watch. So therefore, like the Jesuits said, give me the child until they are seven.
I'll show him the man.
So therefore, the Jesuits knew that the whole concepts of who this child is, who this human is completely constructed by the time they're eight. And if that's the case, then you will know by the time the child is 7 or 8 years old exactly who that person's going to turn out to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then anything that you do beyond that point that threatens that story. So for me, it was like, if I kiss this girl, is my father going to love me? Am I going to create a mortal sin?
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Yeah. So it's all caught up in it's all caught up in the emotion. It's all caught up in that scenario without you realizing it, right?
So, without
you consciously realizing it.
So the thing was, though, one of the most important things of everything I said there was that the belief system, excuse me, I think I'm going to sneeze.
Bless you. Are you going again? We're going again.
It's always three. No, I got it.
Okay.
So the most important thing for people to understand there is the belief system, right? So your belief systems, anything that challenges your belief systems, i.e. there is something you can do that is could be a mortal sin, it doesn't matter what your more evolved part of your brain does from that point on, it's all based in the mammalian brain.
So
and if the belief system is, I am not good enough for my father, there is something I could do that is not good enough for my father, then that becomes the beliefs that you take through your life.
Yeah, so I think this is the point I'm trying to make here then, is that you've had this experience, right? So this is just one of the experiences you talk about, right?
Yeah.
And you had a really good upbringing.
Yeah.
So the thing is that it's not about whether it was a good or bad upbringing, it's not about what actually happened. As much as people like to, like when we talk about that stuff, the trauma or the emotion comes from how we've perceived it. As much as it, some of the people we've worked with over the years have had massive things happen to them, right?
Yeah.
Massive things. Other people have had like what you would consider to be less massive, like as in not as big in some way, but they've been equally as big because your psyche makes it that. Do you know what I mean? For you, that was everything.
Yeah.
You know, that one moment, that one thing was like saying, I'm not enough. You know, I wasn't good enough. And so what happens is this kid, like we just imagine the child has come along with this understanding, right?
Yeah.
And as an adult, you will go around and about your life, living your life, and things will seem okay, right? Because what we do as adults is we kind of go, okay, you find a way to cope with it. Now, because this concept that's gone on, this thing that's happened for you, has, as a kid, you can't make sense of it, right? As a kid, you, the child part of you can't work it out. Like the child, little Mitch at 8 years old would not have been able to work out in his little mind that I can't comprehend that there'd be something I would do that my dad wouldn't love me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So because the little Mitch couldn't comprehend that, he's got to find a way of dealing with that, right? So it's like an adult version comes in that is able to handle life with that new understanding that if there was something, there was something I could do that dad wouldn't love me, right? So we go about our lives. We have these things happen in our lives, but every now and then, because it, like that situation that you were just talking about, it's in the mammalian brain, it actually is sitting in a part of our brain that runs the subconscious mind, right. Yeah. Right? So there's three parts of our brain. We've actually got three brains, right, as three parts of our brain. And the part of our brain that is running the subconscious mind and the subconscious loops, that's where it's sitting.
Yeah.
So if somebody was to come in and say, your dad loved you no matter what, it would be, you'd hear it,
yeah,
but the hearing of it wouldn't change your knowing of what happened back there, and therefore you, it wouldn't make a difference to who you are.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I think that people think, a lot of people think that they can go around and consciously tell themselves I'm okay,
yeah,
or I'm worthy or I'm deserving, but deep down inside something has happened that that little kid hasn't figured out.
That's right.
And so what happens is that rears itself as we go through life. So something random will happen and next minute what will be happening is that you will just lose your shit,
yeah,
or you'll say something, you're like, where did that even come from?
Why did I say that in that interview? Why did I say it at that dinner? Like, well, I was there for 100%. Dinner with this girl. What happened? And what people don't realize is that there's things happening within the environment that are helping the mammalian brain to remember things.
Remember.
So you act out of that childlike state of yourself. Anything that puts you under pressure or that raises any of the loops of if you have hardwired your brain to believe you're not good enough,
yeah,
anything, if somebody comes to love you or comes to get close to you, why do you push them away?
Yeah.
Because it challenges that concept that you believe 100%. In, which is I am not good enough. Comes along and says, I want to hire you, I want you for this job. Why do you then fart in the interview or I don't know, or drop the glass on the ground or just burst into tears or sweat?
Do something, yeah.
It's because they are challenging that part of your brain that says, no, loop says you are not good enough.
Yeah.
You are not smart enough. You are not intelligent enough. You are not good enough comes from a parent going, you shouldn't do that. That's not good enough. You just have to be told that once or twice at 5 or 6 years old, and you hear that coming from your parent, you will for the rest of your life build a belief that you are not good enough. Now,
there's a potential of that. It doesn't happen for everyone, but that can be as simple as that.
Yeah, your mammalian brain's job is to get you to your deathbed safely. So it doesn't matter. So people think, oh yeah, I'm going to change my, you know, consciously I want to be a millionaire. But if your subconscious mind, that innermost dominating thought says, you are not good enough, it doesn't matter what the fuck you think in your conscious mind, because your conscious mind has no control over it. Mm-hmm. If your conscious mind had any control over it, it would basically mean that you would have your Ferraris, you would have your Lamborghinis, you would have your harem, you would have your house in the south of France, you'd have your super yacht with all your maids. That would be your reality. Why is that not your reality? If you're capable of creating anything, then why aren't you creating your reality? It's because your conscious mind is not in charge of anything. Your subconscious mind is in charge of it, and your subconscious mind is full of loops, just repetitive loops over and over and over and over and over again.
And the way that you know that your subconscious mind is in charge is because you will see the cycles in your own life. And the cycles will be, you're in one relationship, you leave that relationship, you go to another one, and you realize that you're actually with the same person. They might look different or be from a different part of the world, yep, but they're exactly the same. You're in exactly the same relationship.
Yep.
Or you'll have one set of financial situation here in this job, and then you'll leave that job, go to this job, and you'll be in, yep, exactly the same place. So you've got cycles that tell you that actually who's in charge of the show is this part of your brain, this childlike part of yourself that hasn't worked it out yet.
So can I say something?
Yeah.
The behaviors that you have within your career, your relationships around money will tell you, give you a clue as to what's going on at a deep subconscious level.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
So to fix to bridge the gap between where you are and the reality that you want, you must deal with what happened back there.
Yes.
And if you can imagine that, you got these tapes playing over. This is a great Bruce Lipton example. You got these tapes playing over and over and over and over and over and over again, right? And you're there and your conscious mind is going, I'm going to be a millionaire. I'm going to be rich. I'm going to have the house in the south of France. I'm going to have the perfect relationship. But and you're screaming at this, trying to change your world. The problem is your subconscious loops are on play. You have to put a different recording in there. So you have to be able to stop the subconscious loop, flip the script on the story of what happened. And when you do that, you quieten the mind. You quieten that inner child. And when that inner child quietens, there's an inner genius comes out of that inner child. And that inner genius now takes over. And you record a different loop.
Mm.
And that different loop then broadcasts out of, just like a speaker, out of the speaker into the world. It broadcasts into the atmosphere, God's sphere. That's what the word atmosphere means. And it tangles with particles to bring about a new reality that you want. Mm-hmm. So the key is you have to change the loop.
Mm-hmm.
You have to change the story.
Yes. And the only way you can do that is you've got to look at, you've got it, like you just said, you've got to change it. The tape recorder, the tape that's playing, and you've got to put a new tape in.
Yep.
Or you've got to record over that tape. And if that tape is saying, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not intelligent enough, and you are trying to fix that by saying, no, I am, and prove it in your job, in your work, in your career, in your relationships, at some point you will sabotage that, because you will bring your life back down to the point at which your brain and your that inner child truly believes you're worthy of. So
one of the things I want to say there is that one of the reasons that people get so challenged with the concept of looking, because the conscious mind will go, oh, you've already done this.
Yeah.
You've already done that. That's, you've already done all your work. But if we look at your relationships, if we look at your finances, if we look at your career, is that a reflection of the lies that you might be telling yourself?
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because the conscious mind doesn't want to look at what's happened at a deep subconscious level.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what great books you read or what ideas you have, what seminars you attend or what podcast you listen to. It doesn't matter. If you don't do the work,
yeah,
you'll never get what you want. So the subconscious mind doesn't want to look at that stuff because it believes because it believes that anything that threatens the loops threatens the survival of the being.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense?
Yeah.
But what's just that, so it takes courage.
Yes.
And what's just on the, it takes courage to stop and look at that stuff. It takes responsibility. It takes humility. All of the beautiful characteristics that you need to be able to actually create the life that you want.
Yeah.
So the key then is to stop and say, okay, I'm going to have the courage. I'm going to have the responsibility. I'm going to have the, you know, the tenacity to be able to stop and really, really deeply look at what has gone on.
Well, this is the thing, right? So the whole premise of this reel, which is why we're talking about this, is that in response to not getting the attention I deserve, right?
Yeah.
I've decided I'm going to cause problems on purpose.
Right.
And realistically, that's what the inner child does. The inner child is like saying, hang on a second, look at me. There's something you haven't seen here. There is something that you haven't looked at. There is a story you're telling yourself that is not true.
Mm-hmm.
There is a story that you're telling yourself that is only part way reality, like, because we're not taking away from the fact that something happened and that something created that, right? But the story that you're telling yourself about it isn't true. And there is another way to look at the story. So the inner child is screaming out, hang on a second, pay attention, pay attention, yeah, pay attention. Mm-hmm. There's something for you to see here. There's a level of love that you're about to, that you have a possibility of reaching that you haven't seen.
Yeah.
Now, when we see it as just the drama and the dramatics of the child, right, we just go, oh, my God, and you just try and tuck it away so that you go, okay, let's not look at that again. Let's see if that we can tuck that down even further.
Yeah.
That's one way to deal with it, but you're not dealing with it because it's going to rear itself again. Now,
that's right.
I know this, and I was telling somebody about it the other day. I think I was telling Lexi about it the other day, and I was telling somebody else about it, that when I was a kid, that's how it was for me. It was like, push it all down, push it all down, push it all down, push it down. Something little would happen, like slight, and I would explode, and it would be that kid inside of me like going rah, because it's not being heard, it's not being listened to. Push it all down, push it all down, until I actually flipped the script and saw what was actually going on. It wasn't until then that I was able to go, right, I see what's actually happening here. This is what it was trying to show me. So the other thing I will say here is that a lot of when you speak about, and I think this is a really important point, you said about responsibility. And you spoke about the fact, like even in you and your situation with your dad, it wasn't your dad that did it to you. It's regardless of the fact of how big or small the story appears to be in your mind, it's not about your dad. It's all about you and yeah. how you perceive it, right? So this is not a throwing rocks exercise.
No.
This is not a, oh my God, dad did this and now my inner child is ruined, right?
Yeah.
That's not what this is about. Because if that's the case, your world, your life, your empowerment, your success, your everything is in the hands of some other person. When you can take that back and go, right, it's how I saw it and there's a possibly another way to see it, then you can become empowered. So I noticed a lot of people commenting, oh, I noticed this is my mum, this is my brother, this is my partner,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
I'm like,
yeah, yeah.
Well, the big message we're saying to you is actually no, it's all of us. Every single person has the potential to have an inner child in there that has not been seen. The story that that kid is telling itself is not true, and it's trying to appear to you in such a way to say, hang on a second, look at me. Does that make sense?
Totally.
That it's not about blaming anyone. It's about really looking and taking responsibility at what is it that's causing this. What yeah. is that? What's the subconscious loop? What's going on in my brain that is that I keep repeating myself and saying this stuff over and over and over again to myself that is actually not true?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter what we do on the outside, it doesn't matter how many businesses we have, how much money we have, any of that stuff, unless you sort out that core thing, that core issue, that core misunderstanding, that core moment, everything else is just going to your inner child is going to keep coming up. It's going to keep showing itself.
Well, you have to understand this: the inner child saboteur's job is not to ruin your life,
yes,
but to actually lead you
100%
to where you need to see where the tools are so you can build your life.
It's saying, look here, everything you need is right here.
Yeah.
You don't need to look elsewhere.
Yeah.
Because the truth and the magic of what everybody needs to be able to have the lives that they want is in what happened back there.
Yeah.
Not despite what happened back there.
Yeah.
It's actually in it.
Mm.
So everything that you got from your dad saying that to you, right, and that led you down a path.
Mm-hmm.
That led you down a path that we've spoken about many times, you know,
yeah.
with your drugs, your alcohol, with all the stuff that ended up happening to you in your life. It led you down a path. But if it wasn't for that, if you were trying to avoid that and not see the beauty in what happened in that moment and the fact that it led you on that path and you keep trying to blame it, then you're not seeing the actual magic in what happened.
Mm.
You're trying to use that as, you know, people have, you know, people can either – they can choose to do one of two things, right? They can choose to use their story as the reason why they're not successful and getting ahead and doing what they love and following their dreams and aspirations. Or they can use their story as the tool to become successful and to follow their dreams and aspirations. And the key difference to that is just flipping the script and seeing how you see
Reality. And to understand life's job is to enable you.
100%.
And the only reason we get emotional in those moments when we perceive we've screwed things up is because we haven't seen the blessing. We haven't seen the lesson. We come away from the job interview thinking, I fucked it up, you know. Why would I even bother? Why did I even go there? Rather than going, okay, something happened there and there's another greater career, a greater job just waiting for me. And I need to harness what happened there. And it's trying to show me to look at a part of myself that I haven't dealt with because I didn't consciously go in there to fuck this up. Something happened at a deep subconscious level. So my deep subconscious mind is trying to show me something. It's trying to ensure I nullify this repetitive cycle of not feeling good enough by getting that wherever this is stemming from, that's where my tools lie. That's where my gems lie. That's where my strength and wisdom and everything I need to be able to get and build the life of myself actually lies. It's really, really primitive to think that, you know, life is not against you. Life is designed in order for you to fulfill something really important here.
100%.
But you can't do it if you're a victim of your history.
100%.
Cool.
Actually, can I just say,
yeah.
It was just really good to have that reminder about how, like, that I think it was good to be able to talk about it because I feel like sometimes we forget, like I said at the beginning of this, that sometimes we forget that these things are important, right?
Yeah.
Can I just say something else, right?
Yeah.
Really important. I think this is the most important part.
Then I'll say the most important part.
No, I'm going to say the most important part. How many people think that you look like Ellen?
Oh, my God. Do you know how many comments we've had? People going,
how does that make you feel?
Well, I thought I looked like Stephen Curry more than Ellen DeGeneres.
No, I think a lot of people really thought you out. Like, a lot of people were literally on there going, oh, I had to watch this five times to realize it wasn't Ellen or something like that.
That's why we got 4 million views.
Oh, dear.
I'm not Ellen DeGeneres.
And there were a couple of people that thought you were a bit cute as well there, Bitchy. Did you see that?
Yeah, what was that one comment that those little shits said?
Yeah, there was a little comment. It was so funny. I just literally laughed and laughed. I had to send it to Ange straight away. I was like, Ange, you're going to get a kick out of this.
Never heard the end of it.
And there was a couple of girls, I think, and I thought it was maybe one of those.
You thought it was a bot.
I thought it was probably a bot side or something, because it on the comment it said, is it just me that was only looking at this cute old man? And I was thinking, oh my God, Mitch's balance thing would be like, how do I, is he, am I cute or am I old? I can't believe they think I'm old, and I can't believe I'm cute. I'm like backwards and forth. But did you see there was another one that was just cute?
Yeah.
And I sent it to you the other day. I was like, oh my God, look at this one, Mitch. There you go.
What did it say?
It just said that you were cute.
That's one in 4 fucking million. give me a break.
Well, at least there's one.
Yeah.
Anyway, lovely chatting with you, Ellen, and I'll see you next time.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.